everybody. Welcome to Five Rounds. Today we are here in downtown Toronto. I am John Ramdean alongside Cody Saftick, one of the hosts from Bully Beatdown, as Robin Black is taking a much-deserved vacation in Sin City. So, Cody, we're going to talk about what's going on in the world of mixed martial arts. Also coming up in the show, we're joined by former Glory welterweight champion Bazooka Joe, as well as the winner at the tournament winner at Glory 33, Matt Embry. See, I guess is going to be facing off with the winner of Gabriel Varga and Robin Van Roosmalen.
It could be an all-Canadian matchup.
Yeah,
John.
Amazing. So, but we got to talk about some of the big things that people are talking about in the MMA landscape, and I don't think there's anything bigger than the UFC's announcement, because people are pissed off for some strange reason. Like, you look at what was going on before, whatever, I guess yesterday. Who knows when people are watching this. There was rumored Chris Weidman, Yoel Romero.
Yeah.
Confirmed Frankie Edgar, Jeremy Stephens. Confirmed Kelvin Gastelum, Donald Cerrone. Confirmed Rashad Evans, Tim Kennedy. Confirmed, what else was confirmed on
people,
that card at the time?
And people 2 days ago were thinking, this is a stinker of a card.
Yeah.
I can't believe they're going to New York.
To me, it just baffles the mind. And then the UFC announces, and Jacek and Kovalevich was also on the card as well. And rumored Wonderboy Thompson and Tyron Woodley, the welterweight champion. So that was the card. That was the card. I think most people, yes, we were waiting for it to be official, Chris Weidman and so on and so forth. But for the most part, you had Cerrone, you had Frankie Edgar, you had Njacek on the card, you had Rashad Evans on the card, you had all Wonderboy and the current champion, Tyron Woodley, on the card. But it's only when the UFC announces Conor McGregor taking on Eddie Alvarez that people are like, now I can tune into this fight card. Why do you think that is? Is it just because people need to see the things that Conor brings to the table, all the hype? Because Eddie Alvarez isn't that type of guy. We know that Eddie Alvarez is a scrapper. You can, if you're paying your money, Eddie Alvarez is the guy you can bank on.
Right, but the thing is, a card's only as good as that top premier fight. And the reason I say that is you can load up a card with as much talent as you want. And what you're going to end up is you're going to end up with a card like UFC 200, where you can say, listen, guys, Misha Tate's going to headline this card against Amanda Nunes. It's a title fight. It's great. We're going to have Jose Aldo and Frankie Edgar in the co-main event. It's a title fight. It's great. And people think to themselves, John, no, it's not what I was expecting, because, you know, it's UFC 200 and I want something big. So they have to add Brock Lesnar because they had to have that one gem at the top of it. So now you look at this card, and right off the bat, they weren't promising, but they were strongly hinting that you'd get the return of Ronda Rousey. So people thought to themselves, listen, MMA has not been legal in New York since the dawn of the actual sport. It's a big moment. We're going to Madison Square Garden. People dream about fighting there. These guys, UFC spend millions.
You really don't even have to sort of cut you off, but you don't have to give them anything, essentially. You could have just given them Joe Blows. Sure, I'm not saying that you're not going to give them quality names. You could give them a few names, and I guarantee that Madison Square Garden is going to be filled.
Yeah, sure, it might be filled, but it's the same thing with the ACC or the Sky Dome. Look, when they came to Toronto, everyone was like, oh my God, it's finally legal in Toronto. We have to support
the
show. We have to go.
And
you know what they gave us? They gave us nothing. They gave us George against Jake Shields, which is a bad fight. But as a whole, you don't remember the Lyoto Machida kicking Randy Couture in the face. You don't remember John Jones sleeping, guys. You don't remember Rory throwing around Nate Diaz. You don't remember any of that.
Hold on,
you're a super fan, John. I'm just saying, as a generalization, is I remember getting onto the subway. Put it this way, right? I saw Shogun Machida 1 in Montreal.
Yeah.
And Shogun knocks out Machida, and the place goes wild. Now, these are two guys that are essentially both Brazilians fighting in Montreal.
Yeah.
The place went wild. The streets were packed. Everybody was chanting. Everyone was cheering. It was an amazing vibe. George laid on top of Jake Shields.
Now, does that matter?
Not even the whole time, because it wasn't even the ground war the whole time. But at the end of it, I remember sitting on a subway, and it was just crickets. Because that's how they left. Had they left after Mark Hominick versus Jose Aldo, the place would have blown up. But you need that main event. And with Tyron Woodley, Wonderboy Thompson, it's not likely going the distance. But it wasn't that thing that they were looking for. When Jacek, great fighter. It's a good fight. Just Kovalevich, is she even really the second best girl in the world? I don't know. They needed something, and McGregor was that something.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But I think that the body of work that the thing about George is George fought so intelligently throughout his career. That's why he stayed at the top of the mountain for so long. When you're facing the Jake Shieldses and the Johnny Hendrixes and the guys that George had faced throughout his career, this is the game. It was a turning point where, you know, you saw before George was the dominant force at 170 pounds, you had guys that weren't necessarily skilled in all areas. And then you saw everybody take huge leaps. So it's like, okay, this is the landscape. This is how we have to fight these fights. So you could understand that. But what happened was, just like this fight card in New York, whether it's Donald Cerrone and Jacek, Chris Weidman, Frankie, they come to fight every single time. So I don't think that you necessarily needed Connor and Eddie Alvarez, because once the show would be finished, people are like, holy cow, these guys put on a show in New York City. And you, when you're talking about Toronto and Montreal, being in Montreal for that UFC with Shogun and Machida, Montreal's a fight town. You can go see kickboxing events and MMA events that aren't UFC or boxing events. Same with New York City. That's a fight town. So there's fight history there. So fight fans understand what good fighting is. Toronto just doesn't have that.
Fair enough.
Ontario doesn't have that.
The main thing is, though, when you put on a card like Wonderboy Tyron Woodley, then yeah, the people who understand the fighting, John, they're going to watch it every single time. But because it's the New York card and because it's a premier event, they want to try to get those casuals. And if you're at a bar, and I know you're watching the fights, but nobody watches fights at a bar. If you really want to sit down and watch them, I get it. Just not my scene personally. I shouldn't say not everybody. But
I understand what you mean.
If you're sitting
a lot of idiots at those places.
If you're sitting in that environment, right, do you think anybody's going to be like, oh, honey, Tyron Woodley and Wonderboy are on? No, nobody cares about that. So at the end of the day, you're, hey, guys, we're going to go to the bar tonight. We're going to have some drinks at a Boston Pizza, and we're going to watch the fights. It's going to be a good time. You go there. Well, what's on the card? Well, you know, Frankie Edgar. Oh, yeah. I remember from UFC 200, you got thrashed. Well, where he's a – yeah, well, we got Joanny and Jacek, never heard of her. Well, we got Carolina Kowalkwood, yeah, never heard of her. And we got Tyron Woodley, yeah, I never heard of him. So you need that thing to be able to say, well, Ronda's on or Connor's
sure,
on. And at that
Cerrone.
Moment, everybody – and I love Cerrone, but think about this in just terms of perspective. Jeremy Stephens versus Frankie Edgar is on the prelims, John.
Yeah.
This is one of the best cards I have ever seen in my life, at least certainly on paper. We'll see how it pans out.
Well, it just depends on how you use these guys because, for example, in Jacek and Kovalevich, you said that nobody knows Kovalevich. Now, then why not give free TV a championship fight? If you want to expose these girls to the masses.
I think because they're trying to build the division, and if it could be the what's leading into
like, just
the
like you
fights.
Said, nobody gives a shit. Nobody knows who they are. So why don't you give the free audience, give them this championship fight so it's exposed to the masses. Because I've seen how people, when you mentioned Boston Pizza, I've seen how people watch fights at Boston Pizza or some of these bars. They don't watch until the co-main event.
That's
until
why you have to have a banger of a co-main
right,
event.
So then why not put Donald Cerrone on there, who you know people will be interested in. They're going to tune in on pay-per-view to watch Donald Cerrone, and then you're setting up potentially the next title challenger at 170 pounds. Donald Cerrone goes out and takes out Kelvin Gastelum, and either Woodley or Wonderboy, either Woodley retains or Wonderboy becomes the new champion. You can sell Donald Cerrone as the next title challenger.
I would guess that the thought process on it would be, let's say you and I and our fictional friend Tim are watching the fights together, and we're like, hey Tim, we want to buy the pay-per-view. If that last fight leading in is Frankie Edgar versus Jeremy Stephens, and we're leaving after, Tim's going to say, whoa, man, that was an awesome fight. I'm going to go with them and watch the fight. I'm in it. Let's watch this pay-per-view. I'll pitch some money.
But
that was crazy.
When have you seen Jacek not deliver?
I love it, but it's a 5-round thrashing, and it's one-sided, and girl fights is not for everybody. It's certainly for me, but it's not for everybody. And I think some people might look at that, two pretty girls, and think,
yeah, but I think
these are
you
two Polish girls who speak broken English, and that's now – I'm going to spend $60 after seeing that. I would, but I'm just trying to. When
but
I
it's
say
all the lead up though, it's
when
not,
I say people don't care, I'm always thinking as a generalization,
sure,
not the people who are the people who have listened to the show till this point doesn't apply to them, right? Those are obviously hardcore fans, people who are knowledgeable. I just mean as a whole, everybody knows that keyboard warriors, if that's the term you want to use,
that is the
not word. Everybody respects, you know, something that should be respected.
And because again, my point is, if you're at home and you're watching on free TV and you need something that is going to put you over the edge, say, oh, I'm going to go check out the pay-per-view with Cody and John. The reality is, because the main card now, as it looks, Conor McGregor, Eddie Alvarez for the lightweight championship of the world. So the featherweight champion,
awesome.
The undisputed featherweight is awesome. Featherweight champion, Conor McGregor against the undisputed lightweight champion, Eddie Alvarez. The co-featured bout for the UFC welterweight championship, Tyron Woodley, Stephen Thompson. For the 115-pound championship, and Jacek Kovalevich.
When was the last time we've seen three
yeah,
title
crazy.
Fights, man?
Weidman, Yoel Romero, and Khabib and Michael Johnson. I love that they put Khabib and Michael Johnson on there because you want somebody on the pay-per-view that potentially could be the next challenger for the guy in the main event.
Yeah.
And then so you're at home and you're watching. Okay,
it's a great card,
you're watching
John.
Thiago Alves, Jim Miller, Misha Tate on the card taking on Rocky Pennington, Rashad and Tim Kennedy, Calvin Gastelum and Donald Cerrone, and then ending with, say you watch Frankie Edgar and Jeremy Stephens. So you've watched all of those fights, and then you see in Jacek and thing. So you just already got yourself amped up. Then you see these girls smashing the shit out of each other, all bloodied up. It's like, I'm getting that f***ing pay-per-view.
Because
sure.
I'm already fired up by that.
That's right, because you're already gone through those fights, and you've seen it. So on top of that, you're introducing Jacek to the masses, and then you're giving people another reason to tune into the pay-per-view.
But let me ask you this, right? Yeah. Let's say that exact same card. And John, that card was perfect. But let's just take the McGregor fight off of that, right? You watch Rashad and you watch Thiago Alves and you watch Khabib and Michael Johnson.
Yeah.
That if they tell you the next fight's this Yoani and Jacek fight, that might be your time to go to the bathroom. That might be because you've been spoiled.
But not but if they you show the highlights.
If they tell you, guys, I know it's been crazy so far, but the McGregor fight's still yet to come.
True, I understand that.
You keep
that. But the UFC hype machine, and they have all the viz, you just show in Jacek battering
every single
Penne.
Person.
Exactly. Yeah. You show her in her fights with Val, and in her fights with Penne, smashing her opponents. People are like, whoa, I need to see this girl. Is this the new Cyborg? Is this the new Ronda Rousey? So in addition to driving people to the pay-per-view, you're also helping to build a star that way. So, I mean, the reality is we're going to watch all these fights.
Oh, right? Everybody's spoiled when it comes to this card.
Yeah, former Bellator champion Lyman Good in the very first fight of the night. That's crazy.
Lyman Good, I know. Kicking it off. New York native.
Yeah, so
I love
and
this.
He's going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking about some of the other things going down in the world of combat sports. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. I'm happy to be joined by the former Glory welterweight champion, Bazooka Joe. Joe Valtellini, thanks for joining us here on the show. There's so much to talk about in the world of kickboxing. I was just going through who the best kickboxers are of 2016. In your opinion, when you look at the landscape of who the most exciting fighters, the most successful fighters in kickboxing right now, who are some of the guys that you like to watch?
Well, I think you got to look at Rico Verhoeven as one of the top. I mean, in any combat sports you look at, it's the heavyweights that are putting on the big shows, and when you had the Mike Tysons, and you know, those are the fights that people want to see, and Rico's just dominating. I think he has 11 straight wins to his career, and he's having a hard time finding opponents that are going to challenge him. So
well, that's interesting because right now Glory has such a commodity with Rico Verhoeven as the heavyweight champion. He looks the part. He has the history. He can finish fights. You just look at what happened in New Jersey with that fight with Braddock Silva. What is it going to take for people to rally behind a guy like Rico Verhoeven so he becomes on a level of a UFC champion?
Well, I think it's just getting the attention. And in North America, it's really tough. The UFC is such a big machine and a big brand. And when people think of mixed martial arts, they think of UFC. And, you know, being a gym owner myself, people are calling that, hey, do you do
UFC? I want to train UFC.
I want to train UFC. Exactly. So I think the brand is so big and huge that it's going to take a little bit more education. Right. And I think, again, 2017, I'm sure I can share some news with you, is going to be a huge year for Glory Kickboxing. We're looking at 18 shows next year, which is incredible, which gives people a schedule. You know when Glory is going to be on. It's going to be consistent. And again, that's what's going to take. It's going to take consistency of fights, and it's going to take fighters like who you just had, Matt Emery, putting on big knockouts and exciting fights to get the North American fans involved. It's really big in Europe. Again, it's always been big in Japan, so it's just taking a little bit more time here.
And that's what I'm surprised about, that it's taken so long in North America, because you go to different places around the world, and there are kickboxing hotbeds all over the globe. And you know, I'll watch mixed martial arts with some of my friends, and they're like, as soon as the fight hits the ground, they've lost interest.
Exactly.
As soon as there's not action, they've lost interest. Glory is designed for action for the casual fight fans, in addition to the seasoned fight fans who this is what their passion is. So I guess you're right. It just comes down to more time, more people getting familiar with the product.
Well, again, I'm talking to before Rico's last fight, we're talking, and one of the questions we brought up was, how do we build the sport here in North America? And they're under the impression that, you know, these North American fighters need to go over to Holland, they need to go over to Europe and to get that authentic, what they call the Dutch kickboxing right. style, right? But again, I look at it and I didn't really say much, but part of me was like, you know what? You can't really classify us Canadians in that North American, yeah. On that whole term North America, because look, myself was a champion, Simon Marcus became yeah. a champion, we still have Gabriel Varga, yeah. Matt Emery banking noise in the featherweight division, you have Josh Johnsey out
yeah,
west,
looking awesome.
Rob Thomas in a contender yeah, yeah, yeah. tournament coming up in Denver, so we have a lot of talent. And I don't think there's been an American winner of a Glory World title yet. So I kind of don't like to be classified
sure,
as
sure,
in North America
sure.
because us Canadians, I think we're making a big name for ourselves.
Why is it now? Because when I think of kickboxing, you know, you heard it throughout the years. Oh, it's developing. It's developing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, there's this explosion of incredible Canadian talent. And whether they win or lose, you get thrilling fights, fights fans want to see.
I don't know what it is here. I don't know what we have that the U.S. doesn't have.
Yeah.
But I think we just have very strong, passionate athletes. And the ones who are showing and dedicating themselves and that are doing well at the highest level are the ones that have been sticking to kickboxing for the longest. And we've went through so many struggles here as Canadian combat, you know, especially kickboxers.
Yeah, right.
We can't get fights.
Yeah.
We had amateur sanctioning bodies go up, go
yeah,
down.
Yeah, yeah.
Still struggling, you know, to get professional kickboxing here. So we've always had to travel, but we were so passionate and so dedicated to our art. When everybody was jumping to MMA, we stuck with kickboxing and wanted to make big names, and we're lucky to have Glory now.
You mentioned Rico Verhoeven, a huge fight for him. I was looking at some of the best kickboxers of 2016, and I go through the list, and number eight or nine, always on a bunch of different lists, Badr Hari.
That's right.
And, of course, Rico Verhoeven going to be taking on Badr Hari December 10th for Glory Collision.
That's right.
As a fight fan, you have to be a fan of Badr Hari. Of course, not his out of the ring stuff. Not always in the ring stuff as well. But one thing Badr Hari does is he always brings it. He's always exciting. He's always looking for the finish. But when you have a guy like Rico Verhoeven, I picture this fight, if Rico plays the smart game, the technical game, it's his fight to win.
I think so. And you got to look at Badr Hari is not the same Badr Hari that we all saw in the K1 days and it's showtime. So I think it's a little bit more challenging. I think Rico's just a new freak, the new generation of what kickboxing is. But you can't count Badr Hari out. He comes from a great camp in Mike's gym. I think it's an exciting fight regardless, but I still think it's, you know, when you look at it in cars, the old Ferrari versus the new Ferrari. Technology has changed. Rico's consistent. He has had consistent fights, consistent training, and he keeps getting better. He was telling us in his pre-fight interview last time, him and his coach feel he's only at about 70% of his best. So they think he's just going to keep getting better. I think he's 27 years old now. And I just think it's young versus old, and I don't want to say Badr Hari's old.
I know what you mean.
I mean, Rico's been consistent. He's been active, and he's been on a tear. So I have to give the edge to Rico. But you can't count him out for an exciting fight regardless.
Coming up, Glory 34 goes down in Denver, Friday, October 21st. Gabriel Varga taking on Robin van Roosmalen for the featherweight championship of the world. I can't wait for friggin' fight.
Me too.
Robin van Roosmalen has always entertained me every time he steps inside of the ring. And Gabriel Varga is just this guy that came out of nowhere. I mean, for people in the know, they knew
who
he was. But for people that had never seen him before, he, I think, impressed the hell out of a lot of people, whether he wins or loses. Mm-hmm. How do you picture this fight going down?
Well, I think they're different styles. If you watch Robin van Roosmalen, he's that true that with that definition of the Dutch style kickboxing.
Yeah,
he likes to come inside, throw his punches and his low kicks.
Yeah.
Fun to watch. Well, Gabriel Varga, I think, is a little bit better on the outside.
Finesse guy.
He's good, yes. But you can't really say finesse with Varga because he does like to bring that fight.
Yeah.
As much as he's a beautiful technician, we don't understand all the time talking to his coaches, talking to him. Once he gets a little bit of that war in the exchange, he wants to stay in there. He wants to keep fighting. And you saw that with his last fight with Sergey Adamchuk. dog.
Oh, man.
He could have kept the fight on the distance. Yeah, yeah. But instead, he's like, you know what? Let me make this a war. Let me go inside. Let me exchange. So I think his best strategy is to keep the fight on the outside. Will he? I don't know. But regardless, he's got a good chance.
Do the fans ever force a fighter to change the way that they fight? Because if you're playing the technical game, it's like, okay, I got to come and I got to play the smart game, fight from the outside, kind of point fight.
That's right.
The crowd might not have the same reaction. So if you get in the pocket and you start slugging, then everybody starts freaking out. Can the way that fans react change a fighter style?
I think it can. I think it can. And at the end of the day, if you're going to make a name for yourself in the sport, and if you're the name where, you know, people are going to buy tickets and you're going to build yourself as a brand, as a business, you have to put on exciting fights. If you're constantly winning decisions with not any excitement, why do people want to come see you, regardless if you're winning or not? And I know guys have changed their philosophy, and I've even heard GSP saying, well, I don't go to win, I go to do what I have to do to win. You don't look for knockouts. You set them up, you let them happen. But you do need that level of excitement, and I think it's that excitement that's going to help build the sport. So let's start putting on more exciting fights.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about what happened in New Jersey. There is a new middleweight champion in glory. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean alongside Joe Valtellini. We're talking about the kickboxing world. Glory 34 coming up in October. Gabriel Varga, Robin Van Roosmalen. But we're going to reverse and go back and talk about the middleweight fight that went down at Glory 33 in New Jersey. Simon Marcus losing his middleweight championship. You know how many people I heard that believed that this guy was nearly unstoppable. Why do you think that he lost the title?
Well, I got to go with Simon being an emotional fighter, and I think that's one of his downsides. He gets very emotional, and if you saw him with his fight against Joe Schilling in that last man standing, when he gets caught, he has that competitive, aggressive drive where he wants to just open up and throw big punches and get very aggressive, where he loses that his technician side, which I think is one of his biggest assets, is he can fight anywhere, any style, any way, but he is overly emotional. I know we talked about Varga wanting to get an exchange. Simon's that same kind of fighter. He's had a lot of problems when he came into Glory. He's just a Muay Thai fighter. He only knows his clinch, his elbows, and his knees. So I think he's had this mindset since coming to Glory where he needs to kind of overuse his boxing. He needs to get very aggressive because that's the way and the thing people want to see in kickboxing. But I think he just got a little too carried away, a little bit too emotional. You know, it's combat sports, and to fight a guy like Jason Wilnes kind of play with your head and head movement like that, and it's as a Canadian fan and a friend of Simon Marcus, it kind of hurt to see because I know he has the talent to maintain that middleweight title.
But luckily for kickboxing and kickboxing fighters, Muay Thai fighters, that rematches are something we've seen many times. A fighter could face off with an opponent five or six times throughout their career, and I think that Simon's going to come out of this a better fighter.
I think he has to. I think he will. That's his life. He's a fighter. Yeah. He's, you know, talking to him and his coaches and his camps and seeing all of his stuff on social media, he really wants it bad. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you're a fighter and you're a martial artist, you're going to learn from your mistakes and continue to improve and get better.
You're talking about a very busy schedule for 2017 for the Glory organization. We talked about the end of this year, Rico Verhoeven taking on Badr Hari, a pay-per-view, no less. When you look at what's going on in 2017, what are some of the big things you're hoping that the Glory organization will put forth for the fans?
Well, I think it's consistency is number one. Fans need to know what's happening next before all of a sudden this event pops up.
Right.
And that's how it is. The organization is still in the early stages where, you know, they didn't have that opportunity. There was a big announcement, I think about a month ago. Yao Ming, the basketball player's firm, bought a stake in Glory, which is now giving us the resources to be able to put these shows and have a list and to show fans, you know, a year in advance where the shows are going to be so they can plan their schedule around watching these events. And I think that's what it takes. It's going to be consistency, and people want to see it. Every time you turn on the TV, you got a UFC on. You know, you get to get familiar with the athletes. I would like to see Glory put a little bit more attention on building the athlete a little bit more. People want to know who Rico Verhoeven is.
Right.
People want to know who Matt Emberi is, who Robert Thomas is, who Simon Marcus is. Get to know these fighters, connect these fighters, and let them do well. And that's what happened with the UFC and the Ultimate Fighter Show.
How important is it that Glory pulls from all over the world? Is that something that they need to do to make sure they have international talent on their roster?
I think it's important, but a lot. I believe in, you know, the best fight.
Right.
You know, I don't necessarily believe that just because you're from a certain part of the, you know, the country that we're fighting. Yes, it's important because I think promoters look at that as a ticket
sale.
Yeah,
of course.
Right. But for me, I think it just needs to put on the best fights. And once people recognize how good these athletes are and get to know the personal side of them, they're going to be emotionally invested and watch all their fights.
The color commentator for Glory, Joe Valtellini. Tell us about that experience working with our guy Moro. You're getting more and more comfortable, it seems.
Yeah.
Just tell us what it's like to go from competing inside of the ring to being not on the sidelines, but looking from the outside, looking in, giving your perspective, your input to help the viewers understand what's going on.
Well, I think it's tough at first, and you know, I obviously was that athlete. I had to, you know, vacate my world title for injuries rather than on my own will. But I think it opened up a great door for me. And you know, I'm traveling the world, one, which is amazing. And even when I traveled for fights, I don't really travel. I'm cutting weight. I'm not eating. I'm staying in my hotel room. I'm trying to fight the jet lag. So it wasn't really great fighting internationally.
Yeah.
But now I'm getting to go. I'm meeting people that I've never got to meet before. I'm interacting with all these fighters. I'm watching more film than I ever have in my life. And now, even as a coach, I feel I'm at a totally different level.
Mm-hmm. So it helps you as an analyst, and it helps you break down things. That's great.
I feel with a split second, I can analyze the fight. Before they even throw a punch, I know what they're going to throw, what their strategy is. Like, I'm just so... I'm watching kickboxing all the time now. When I was fighting, I barely watched my opponents.
Wow. Bazooka Joe, we're happy to have you here in studio. We're going to take a break. More Five Rounds today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean alongside Glory fighter Matt Emberi, who was successful in his Glory debut. Two fights and one night in New Jersey at Glory 33. Now we'll be fighting for the featherweight championship of the world, but we got to find out who the winner will be between Gabriel Varga and, of course, Robin van Roosmalen. First of all, congratulations on an awesome showing. Did you know when you got the call, it's like, oh, this is going to be my time to shine?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel like it was a long time coming. There are a lot of people were talking about it. Glory had contacted me, like, are you interested in fighting Glory? And I was like, yeah, of course, you know. But I was more directed towards the MMA route. But the whole time, I've been training hard. This is what I do, you know. And I just, even though I hadn't been fighting, I've been improving a lot. So I knew this was like it was the time to bust onto the scene, you know.
Well, what we saw is in your corner, we saw Misha Sirkinov. So we knew that there was some sort of mixed martial arts affiliation. Just tell us about your MMA journey. Like, why did you decide that that was the path you wanted to go down? Because not everybody that chooses kickboxing, we talked to Joe Valtellini, Bazooka Joe, that's his path, is kickboxing.
Yeah.
A lot of combat sports athletes, whether it be amateur wrestling, boxing, jiu-jitsu, they pick a specific path.
Yeah.
Why did you start with MMA and end up in Glory?
Well, I started with Muay Thai originally, and then I kind of deviated over to the MMA scene, but... for me, I just feel like that is the most complete form of fighting. It's the purest form of combat, you know, and I think that's kind of innate in all combat athletes. Like, you want to feel like you are you're the best fighter in the world, and I don't feel like you can lay claim to that unless you do it in MMA. You know, it's the least amount of rules, which is the realest, in a sense. You know, it's the closest to reality. And it's just such a beautiful art. I like the fluidity of it, you know, the blending of all styles. And, you know, like, it's not rigid. You know, there's not one application the way you can fight. It's a really unique expression of your fighting style, and I just feel like, you know, that just kind of goes good with my personality, and I just love fighting, so that's why.
Some of the things I've seen online, you're ready to fight whoever. You're not afraid to sign on the dotted line and take on anybody. Sen Chai, Kevin Ross, you face some of these big name guys.
Yes.
Where did that come from? Mentally, have you just always been this way, or is it through the development? Once you get yourself involved in Muay Thai, you become a hardened individual. That's just a reality. Have you always been this determined, ready to take on anything?
Definitely. I feel like through that adversity, going through that on the come up of your career and stuff is what's really going to mold you to be the complete fighter. I've always seen like the end product. A lot of people, they fight for records, you know. They fight for the facade of being a great fighter, you know. Whereas, like in Thailand, the culture built around it is very gladiatorial, you know. Like those guys are always having hard fights consistently, all the time. Yeah. And winning and losing isn't such a big deal over there because the matchups are like, you know, even. You fight the same guy multiple times too. So like really, like, you know, you're striving for the best that you can be, and the way you become the best obviously is going through the most adversity, and so that obviously was just like me and Simon. Both we come from the same camp, and we kind of have that same mentality. You know, we were in Thailand together training, and it's always just like, yo, fight everybody, fight the hardest fights. You know, get better. What matters is when you're the best in the world.
You were 17 years old when you first started training in at the Science of Eight Limbs. What got you there? What got you through the door?
Started with the internet, like watching videos and seeing how people trained in Thailand, how it was. I just loved that culture. Like I said, the gladiatorial aspect. Like those guys live for fighting and training, and that's very appealing to me. That's what a real fighter is, you know. It's going to be difficult for a man who's not training like that to beat a guy who is, you know. He's in it 100%.
But once you see it on TV, seeing it on TV is
definitely.
But when you get kicked hard in the leg for the very, very first time, it's a very shocking experience.
Definitely.
And it could send some people back out the way they came in.
Yeah, I mean.
What was it about you that enjoyed the dealing with the pain? Because if you can't deal with pain, Thai boxing's not the sport for you.
Yeah, I mean, I always kind of just looked at myself as like a warrior, you know. I don't. It's not for the soft us, you know. It's not for soft people. Fighting is a hard man's sport, you know. Not everyone can be a fighter, you know. It's there's always a saying we say: in order to be a champion, you gotta become a champion, right? You can't just, oh yeah, I'm a fighter. You don't deal with all the, you know, the bruises and the cuts and just the stuff you got to deal with. I just feel like, you know, toughness has always kind of just been ingrained into me, and it wasn't difficult for me to strive through. Obviously, when you start like have your first training session and just being gassed and you know, push your body to the physical limit, but like, you know, it was exhilarating too. You know, like I'm like, yo, this is the best thing in the world. I couldn't ask for something better. You know?
Based on what I read, you were ready to fight as soon as you started training at Siam. Number one.
Yeah, yeah.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready to fight. Yeah. And you, based on what I read, the Suchart, he puts everybody in there, gets them. So the only way to deal with the fire is to be pushed into the fire.
Hundreds.
Did you like that approach?
Definitely. Again, you come from Thailand. People who train Muay Thai, it's not leisurely training. If you're going to be a Nak Muay, a Thai boxer, you're doing it to fight. Period.
4 and 5 years old.
Yeah, it don't matter, right?
Like training
you're doing it to fight, you know. So it is the fight business. I wanted to. Obviously, there's the other aspect. Like you need to actually train to become proficient at it, so you don't get injured or whatever. But I'm always been kind of a natural athlete, and I got it pretty quick. And 6 months in, I had my first fight.
Do you lay out the goals for you? You sign on the dotted line to become a glory fighter. Right now, Glory has taken over for what K1 was back in the day.
Definitely.
It seems like this is the place to make money, to make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
Do you chart out what you need to do? I mean, you're already in that position. You have two excellent fights, two knockouts.
Thank you.
Both Moro and Joe Valtellini, your guy, were very, very high on you. The right hand, the left hook were the weapons of choice night. Now you have opportunity to become the champion. Is this what you planned? Had you mapped all this out?
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of subconsciously, but also consciously, me and the guys were talking. We feel like, you know, obviously, it's the biggest world stage. Muay Thai hasn't hit that pinnacle, and I can't stick around and wait for it to get to there. Plus, like, I just love the exposure of glory, and fights are super exciting. So the plan is, you know, to get that world title, become a glory world champion, you know, solidify myself in the striking world, and then use that as an avenue into MMA and the UFC, because I know that's where I'm going to be next, 100%.
So, is it difficult to spend your time when you're trying to achieve greatness in one specific art, being Muay Thai? Is it difficult to learn the wrestling aspects and the jiu-jitsu aspects as you're trying to master something else?
It can be, but I feel like it also helps. It also opens your mind to other principles and ways of teaching, you know, just different philosophies of the different arts kind of change your outlook on the thing. And bottom line, fighting is a very physical endeavor. It's so important. And sometimes going through, like, you know, the just the day-to-day same old grind that you're doing, it can wear on your brain, you know. But when you start to train in different arts and you're learning different things, you know, it keeps you excited, keeps you into it a bit more, and you're staying fit the whole time, you know. So, like, even though for the past year and a bit I wasn't really mainly focused on striking, I stayed fit, my mind stayed on the fight game, and that was the most important, I think.
He is glory fighter Matt Embry, who looks sensational in New Jersey. We're going to take a break. More of Five Rounds Today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Cody Saftick with you. We are looking ahead to all the action, UFC action, going down in Portland, Oregon this Saturday night as John Lineker and John Dodson will collide at 135 pounds. And do you imagine that the winner of this main event matchup, scheduled for 25 minutes, they'll get the crack of Dominic Cruz, or is that going to be reserved for Cody Garbrandt? Or
is it a rematch
with TJ Dillashaw?
Well, the rematch with TJ Dillashaw probably makes the most sense, but the Cody Garbrandt fight, listen, people got to understand that it's what sells the most. And the Cody Garbrandt fight sells the most. He's a good-looking kid. He's very talented. He's good on the microphone. There's a little bit of heat between him and Dominic Cruz because he's Uriah Faber's protege.
Yeah.
And the storyline is just actually, it's built in.
Yeah.
You know, it's a continuation of a very good rivalry that people have a lot of interest in. You look at the same thing with McGregor. People are upset that Khabib didn't get the shot. And I get it. Listen, I'm a huge Khabib fan. And when you go on that giant win streak, but at the end of the day, it's what makes most sense on a business standpoint. And this was what makes sense on the business standpoint. John Lineker is a flyweight that just couldn't make the weight. John Dodson's a flyweight that just couldn't beat the champ. They're both flyweights fighting at bantamweight,
right.
And they're great bantamweights.
Yeah.
But I don't know that the winner of this is going to necessarily get that title shot.
See, I think that I'm just not confident. I feel, based on, you know, what I know, what I've seen from these guys, the fighters that they are, this is Dodson's fight to lose. He's super speedy. He's got the wrestling advantage. He's been in there with the best fighters in the world, including the pound-for-pound
best. All the best guys.
And Demetrius Johnson.
Those are his only two losses
in the last
10 years.
So when I look at that, I'm not confident because we've seen what John Lineker can do. Once he puts his hands on you, once he smashes up your body, if he decides to start kicking the legs of John Dodson, which I don't know if he's going to because Dodson will just grab a hold and put him on the ground there. But I think you have a good matchup with Dominic Cruz and John Dodson. That's something you could certainly sell. It's like, actually, you went five rounds with TJ Dillashaw, and there's people out there that thought TJ Dillashaw won. I knocked his ass out.
One round.
So that's an easy sell. You can just leapfrog Cody Garbrandt. You can leapfrog TJ Dillashaw if you go out there and look awesome against this John Lineker. I don't know if it works the same way. If John Lineker goes out and stops John Dodson in the first round, second round, is he the guy that you put up in that title spot?
I'm just going to play devil's advocate to that. Let's say you're John Dodson and you go out there and you knock John Lineker out in one round. And hey, possible.
Yeah,
you know, this is MMA. When you're throwing heat like John Dodson is, anything's possible. But let's say he goes in and gets a huge empathetic win. You're like, we're going to promote this guy over. It's like, you know what? This guy lost twice against the flyweight champ. So we know now from 10 rounds of action, he can't beat Demetrius Johnson. So now he's going to jump up and he's going to fight a guy who beat Demetrius Johnson. And you're a hardcore fan, so let me ask you this. If you had the option of seeing John Dodson, who just knocked out John Lineker, who's awesome, would be a great fight, him and Dominic Cruz, which I know you'd love, or I want to see Mighty Mouse jump up to 135 and chuck. We're taking that, right? So I think that, you know, that's obviously up to Demetrius Johnson. But I just feel like if you're Dodson, you need that big win. And to be honest, I think he wins this fight. I think he has to use his wrestling. I think he needs to get that right in right at the get-go. Because the problem with Lineker is, you look at his fight with Ian McCall and you look at his fight with Ali Bogatinov, just don't stand in front of the guy. Take him down. It's the guys like Michael McDonald who are like, oh, I'm going to be able to hang with him. You can't. You can't hang with him. And he's 5'3", so he's hard to take down. But John Dodson, 5'3", he can get you down.
Yeah, and I expect that's going to be – I don't know if Dodson is just going to completely rely on wrestling. I think the wrestling will be a factor early just to put that little nugget into John Lineker's brain that, hey, I'm going to try to take you down. And it's going to get him tentative, and then it's going to open Lineker – or open Dodson striking up, and I'm sure he's going to land a bunch of times. I'm not saying he's going to stop him. I just think that – over the course of 25 minutes, I always expect fights to go 25 minutes. I think over those 25 minutes, John Dodson will have the better moments and win the majority of those rounds.
Well, it's funny you say that, because someone mentioned to me, too. They were like, well, here's the thing with John Lineker. He's got a cast iron jaw. We've seen Francisco Rivera bomb on him. We've seen Michael McDonald bomb on him. They're like, I don't think John Dodson would be able to stop him. I said, listen, TJ Dillashaw had never been knocked out. And and John Moraga, well, he had never been knocked out. And UCR Formiga, well, he got this guy's got power on power. And when you're playing, this is not basketball, right, where you're just going to look on paper and one team's better than the other team. This is punches and kicks to the head, and anybody can knock out anybody. And Dodson's got a lot of power. So I love this fight. I really do.
So many great fights. Yes. We're talking about 135 pounds, but I feel that both these guys, if Lineker kind of – he needs to go see George Lockhart is what he needs to do if he wants to go down to 125 pounds, because we have a 125-pound matchup, Lewis Smolka taking on Brandon Moreno. Lewis Smolka, I'm super high on this guy. I love him.
Excellent.
Co-featured bout, Will Brooks, Alex Oliveira, a fight that nobody is talking about, and it could be a fight that is going to dazzle everybody. Nate Marquardt taking on Tamda Mercury, Andre Feely, Hakran Diaz. Some really solid matchups.
Loaded. And this is what it comes back to. All these cards over the last number of events, we've had, what, six straight events now? The cards are always very, very good. It's just, as a whole, as you're a casual fan, then you need that one big premier or event, right? So something like Cyborg, that's something you can gravitate towards. I think a lot of people like Cyborg. Flip side to that, you're getting Lineker Dodson, which I know we love. I know that hardcore fans will enjoy. I know that people that really follow the sport think this is one of the best fights that have been put together in a long time. But as a whole, if you watch that Cyborg event last weekend and you're going to miss one, this is the one you're going to miss. But when I look at that card, I think the exact same you thinking. Yeah. Man, Will Brooks.
I got to see all these fights.
Will Brooks against Alex Cowboy Oliveira. Yeah. Dan McCrory against Nate Marquardt. I love that stuff, right? So, and even this Lewis Smolka fight. Lewis Smolka versus Brandon Moreno. Brandon Moreno's coming in as a short-notice replacement because he's replacing Sergio Pettis. But this guy's that Henry Cejudo protege who's on this season of The Ultimate Fighter with Yoni Shcherbatov, and he narrowly lost to the current RFA champion, Alexander Pantola. He's a 16-seeded guy. He's 22 years old, and I feel like, as we talked about, the game has developed so much that you can say, oh, short notice replacement. No, these guys are studs. Yeah. The guy that Berkman's fighting, he's good too.
Okay, we got to take a break. We got to take a break. When we come back, our final segment here on Five Rounds Today, before UFC 205 goes down, UFC 204 goes down, in Michael Bisping's backyard. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean with you, joined by Ace Fighting Championship matchmaker Cody Saftick. We're talking about, off the top of the show, UFC 205, that huge card in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say 204 is in London, England, but it's not. It's in Manchester, England. It will be headlined by Michael Bisping, the UFC middleweight champion, taking on Dan Henderson. I know a lot of people are pissed about this rematch because it's for the title. And, oh, Dan Henderson, he didn't deserve it. That should go to Jacare, or it should go to Yoel Romero, or it should go to somebody. F*** off. Dan Henderson has done so much in this sport. He deserves this fight with Michael Bisping. If it is indeed his last mixed martial arts fight, how awesome would it be if he became the UFC middleweight champion?
You know, the same people complaining about Dan Henderson getting the fight were actually the same people complaining about Michael Bisping getting the title fight. Yeah, so yeah, I really don't. It really doesn't matter to me, man. But no, absolutely. Two things I love about this is, one, Dan Henderson, a guy that came over from Pride, a guy that had won the Strikeforce title, had won the Pride titles, had won a UFC tournament title, but had never really won that UFC gold. And I remember when he took on Rampage Jackson, I was like, this is the moment.
That was so close.
I thought he won, man. I remember thinking, shit, Dan Henderson got robbed. But now he's moving down to 185, and he can beat Anderson Silva, and he wins the first round.
Yeah,
and he gets choked down in the second round. I'm thinking, was that it for Dan? And then, you know, his career, like, almost gets the fight with John Jones, whole events get scrapped, you know, injuries, and, you know, had to get released and go to Strikeforce and then come back, and then has a good little string of wins, and then he loses, and then beats a guy like Tim Boach, beats a guy like, he's just been so up and down that ever since 2009, since he came over, it's just been that dream. That's the last thing I want. That's the last thing I want. So it'd be awesome to see that. But the other thing, too, is as much as we like to cheer for guys like Roy Nelson, it's the same way. If Dan Henderson goes out there and wins as a 46-year-old man, there's retired fighters, there's guys at home.
I'm coming back.
There's guys in that bar having a beer there going, shit, I could do that. Yeah. And, hey, that's good for business,
baby. Yeah, that's
baby.
The appeal.
I love Dan Henderson.
I agree. And, you know, we were talking about how big the UFC 205 card is in New York City. This is a sensational card to you. Michael Bisping, Hendo, Gegard Mousasi and Vitor Belfort. Those are the two kind of dark horses, in my opinion, at the middleweight kind of tournament. Because if let's just say Hendo wins the title and then relinquishes the title because, you know, I'm retiring from the sport, the UFC essentially could put a tournament together with Weidman. I know him and Romero are fighting. Jacare and Luke Rockhold are fighting. But there's so many interesting fights that they could put together to have a tournament or a road to the middleweight championship. And I think Gegard Mousasi and Vitor Belfort is one of those fights. Jimmy Manoa taking on Ovince St. Preux. Stefan Struve taking on Omianchuk. There's just so many great fights. Albert Tumanov, again, one of my prospects to watch, as well as Jiu-Jitsu whiz Leo Santos.
You know what, though? Best case scenario, and it pains me a little bit to say this, but best case scenario, Henderson wins, vacates that title, 8-man tournament. As you mentioned, this division is low. And if Vitor Belfort is the 8-seeded guy, I like his chances.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? He kicks a couple guys in the head, he's back.
I'm with you. A great show. We're talking about everything from New York to Manchester. Got to thank Joe Valtellini and Matt Embry for stopping by. I'm John Ramdean. He's Cody Saftick. Chase Kaiser's running the board. We'll see you guys next time on Five Rounds Today.